Brother Waldron is in a meeting. Lord willing, he will return here on Sunday and be back with us. And I'm sure he will go over a lot of this material again as he picks up and goes forward in the book of Revelation. Sunday we looked at chapter 17, kind of reviewed the beginning of the chapter, and then tried to finish a look at it before our class ended. Let's remind ourselves of what John sees in chapter 17. It begins with one of the angels who has poured out the wrath of God when the seven bowls of God's wrath were poured out. And he tells John to come, and he will show him what? Okay, he will show John the judgment of the great harlot. And that is what the entire chapter is about. In fact, that's really what chapter 17 and 18 are about, is a picture of the harlot and a picture of the judgment, a little more specifically than the general judgments that were poured out in chapter 16, but a little more close look at the harlot and at the judgments that are being poured out. As the harlot is pictured, she is portrayed as one who is arrayed in purple, and she is wearing expensive jewelry, and she's riding on the back of a rather impressive beast, which is also purple, and that's a kind of a picture of royalty and power. But what's the contrast, even in the picture of the harlot, to what the world sees as wealthy and powerful and authoritative? What's the contrast in the view John has shown? Yes, she's got a gold cup in her hand, but that gold cup is full of abominations. It's full of her immorality and her sins. So the picture of the harlot, even though she's impressively wealthy and has great authority, she's just corrupt and sinful and unholy in every way. And then, as John sees this beast with the seven heads and ten horns, and sees the harlot, as it were, riding the beast, he just marvels at it. And it's not hard to imagine, as he sees this vision, he really can't comprehend it either as he first looks at it. But the angel tells him what? He says, "Why marvel? I'll tell you the mystery. I'll show you the mystery of what you're seeing." And he goes on to explain to John in symbolism that all of these kings that are under the influence of this beast, as they come together and they kind of cede their authority to this beast and they come under its influence, they are going to fight against the Lamb. But there's no reason to be concerned. Why? The Lamb will overcome. And the Lamb will overcome because the Lamb is King of kings and Lord of lords. The Lamb is supreme. And as we look at this, as we see the general teaching, we can't help but miss that all the stuff that's talked about, even in the religious world, of this great battle that's to come is just non-existent. There is no battle. The Lamb simply has the power, and the Lamb will exercise it when he's ready, and that will be that. And that is the comfort that's being given to John in these visions that he will give to the Christians. And then at the very end of chapter 18, as we see here is verse 14, says they will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And who will be conquering with him? Those who are faithful, those who have been chosen by God. And those are the ones that He chose aforetime, those who would believe in His Son and those who would be faithful to Him. And it says that the angel said to me, "The waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages." And we see that as her influence over the world, a very wide and strong influence over the world. And the 10 horns you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to carry out His purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth. So as that chapter ends, and that's the way our scriptures divided, in the vision there wasn't pauses like that, but as our chapter ends, there's the picture of even those who have been under the influence of this great city, they are going to turn and hate her. And we talked about how that's seen even today, when those who are in authority and have great power and great influence abuse that so much that even those who had one time looked to her as something will turn against her. And that's what's portrayed here at the end of chapter 17. But as we begin looking at chapter 18, now John sees another angel. In 18 verse 1, "I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was made bright with his glory, and he called with a mighty voice." As we begin looking at this, it's not too much later, I think it's the next chapter, when John is so overwhelmed by these visions of greatness and grandeur that he tries to do what? Do you remember? He falls down to worship who? The angel. And the angel won't accept it. And it's really hard for us, I think, as we read, to realize the grandeur of the vision that God's giving. But this angel that he sees now, that's coming out of heaven, he's coming down from heaven. And he has great authority. And his presence just casts a light and illuminates everything around him. And as he comes down, he speaks, and his voice is mighty, and he says what? Yes, Babylon the Great has fallen. My text says, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. It's over. Babylon has fallen. And then the rest of this chapter gives us the picture of Babylon's fall and of the reaction of those who have loved her. Here in the first and second verses, it says, "He called out with a mighty voice, 'Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast.'" So this city, as it were, most likely a reference to Rome, has fallen now, and what once was grand and glorious to the eye is now just a haunt for what? Everything that's unclean. It's just a desolate, waste place. Babylon has fallen. In verse 3, we see how much her influence has contaminated everything. It says, "All nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality. And the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her. And the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living." So her influence has just corrupted everything. I mean, there's just not much left out of that list, even though it's short. There's the nations that are drunk with the passion of her immorality. The kings have committed immorality with her. And even the merchants. The merchants have become addicted to her because of what?
For the money they've made.
Yeah, the money they're making. She's giving them a luxurious life, so they're just coming to her. Her influence has just corrupted everything. And now she has fallen. And then it says in verse 4, "Then I heard another voice." This is not the voice of that mighty angel, but this is another voice, and it's speaking from where? It's speaking from heaven. And I think that's a really interesting contrast. You have this mighty and powerful angel that's coming down. The glory of his presence lights everything around him. His voice is mighty as he pronounces the fall of Babylon. But then there's a voice that comes from heaven. And that voice is a voice of warning. It says, "Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. For her sins are heaped as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." Think about that. In this vision, as the fall of Babylon is here, what is God's warning? What's the voice from heaven warning? Yes, you get away. Don't take part in any of this. You come out of her. But that's not unique to Revelation. Brother Bullington? That's right. Brother Bullington is referring back to chapter 14 where it talks about in verse 8, fallen is Babylon the Great, she who made all nations drink the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality. And that's a good reference to go back to. It again shows how corrupting her influence is. It's just whatever she touches is just ruined. It just becomes immoral. And God's warning is you come out of that. But back in 2 Corinthians, turn back to 2 Corinthians if you would. Look at a warning that was given to them in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, starting in verse 14. 2 Corinthians 6:14. Listen to the similarity of the warning. "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? What fellowship has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, as God said, 'I will make my dwelling place among them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.' Therefore go out from their midst and be separate from them, says the Lord, and touch no unclean thing. Then I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you shall be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty." And then Paul says, "Since we have these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of the body and spirit, bringing holiness to completion in the fear of God." In verse 17, he tells them to be what? Be separate. Be separate. That's the warning to Christians at Corinth. It's come out of the world. Be separate from it. And that's the warning that heaven is giving here. The voice of heaven is saying, come out. Her defilement is great. And God, as it were, is speaking out of heaven, or the voice is coming from heaven, so it's from God's will. "Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. For her sins are heaped high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." So as God remembers her iniquities, God has done what to her? He's passed judgment. God has remembered her sins. Her sins are high. They are piled high. And God has remembered and He has passed judgment. And look at what the voice says. The voice in verse 6 says, pay her back as she herself has paid back others. And repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed. Think about that. In Revelation chapter 14, where we were just a moment ago. In Revelation 14 and verse 9, it says, an angel, another angel, a third, followed them saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in its image, receives a mark on his forehead or on his hand, now this is for those who worship the beast, he also will drink the wine of God's wrath poured full strength. Now that's half of the wrath that God's showing Babylon. In Babylon, he says here in verse 6, repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion in the cup she mixed. But for those who worshiped her in chapter 14, in verse 10, he says he also will drink the wine of God's wrath poured full strength. And look at what full strength is. Poured full strength into the cup of his anger, and he will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest, day or night, these worshipers of the beast in its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. That's quite a contrast. In chapter 14, those who have worshipped the image, those who have taken on the character or the mark of the beast, they have God's wrath poured undiluted, full strength. And the torment is tremendous. But when God gets here, and the voice from heaven speaks here, the drink that Babylon will drink is how strong? It's twice as much. It's double. God says, repay her double. Mix her drink double strong. God's wrath is mighty against this city. And in verse 7, it goes on to explain why. As she glorified herself and lived in luxury, so give her a like measure of torment and mourning, since in her heart she says, I sit as a queen. I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see. What do you call that attitude? What kind of spirit is that? That's arrogance. What does Proverbs say about that kind of attitude? Does a verse come to mind? God hates a proud look. Pride. Pride goeth before destruction. That's right. A haughty spirit before a fall. And what has Babylon done? What was the pronouncement? Fallen, fallen is Babylon. And the judgment on Babylon is double as strong, in God's words, twice as strong as the judgment that He's pouring out on those who worshiped her. It's an indication of how angry God is with this sinful people, I think, this sinful nation, this government that has rejected God and supported the false religion, at least if our dating is right, the false religion of worshiping the emperor, just completely rejected God. And the wrath of God against that government that refuses to repent, whose attitude here at the end of verse 7, she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see. That's a haughty spirit. I think that may be the indication as we keep reading through this chapter. because that's specifically mentioned. Right at the end of this chapter, it says, in her was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints. What Freddie said was this double portion connected to her persecution of the saints? And I think that's a reasonable connection. The chapter brings it out more than once and ends with that idea that in her is the blood of the prophets and of the saints. So God's very much aware. And also in verse 20, when heaven rejoices over her fall, it says, God has given judgment for you against her. So it's almost like the answer of how long, O Lord, is right here. Here it is, right now. This is for you. Buford? Okay. Buford's looking back at Isaiah chapter 47, verses 7 through 11. Is that what you said? At the destruction of the Babylon of old, and the description and the comparison between the two. Let's read that in Isaiah 47, starting in verse 7. He said, "You said, I shall be mistress forever, so that you did not lay these things to heart or remember their end. Now therefore hear this, you lover of pleasures who sit securely, who say in your heart, I am, and there is no one besides me. I shall not sit as a widow or know the loss of children. These two things shall come to you in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood shall come upon you in full measure in spite of your many sorceries and the great power of your enchantments. You felt secure in your wickedness. You said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge led you astray. And you said in your heart, I am, and there is no one besides me. But evil shall come upon you, which you shall not know how to charm away. Disaster shall fall upon you, for which you shall not be able to atone. And ruin shall come upon you suddenly, of which you know nothing." That's very similar, isn't it, to the... Okay, in 47:1, it refers to, in my Bible, the O virgin daughter of Babylon, O daughter of the Chaldeans. So it is a reference to the Babylon of old, and it's very similar. And it's almost impossible to see that God's reminding them of that destruction of the old Babylon. And here is Rome, really in that same character. Got Babylon written across her forehead. She's even named after. And here is the similarity of that destruction and the similarity of that attitude and the similarity of the judgment that's brought on her. In verse 8, after God has said, I'll repay her double for her deeds and mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed because she glorifies herself and because she says, I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see. He says, for this reason, her plague will come in a single day. In a single day. Now think about that phrase, because that's just fascinating. Here is a city whose influence is just vast. It's just nations and languages and multitudes of people. Kings have ceded their power to her, come under her influence. And you're going to take her on. Now, how long is that going to take? Even if you have a mighty army, and you're going to go against Rome, or Babylon here, how long is that going to take? Oh, yeah. Yeah. It could take years. Even if you could march to the city itself and siege it, it could take years. So how strong is the one who will do this in a day? Your judgment will come in a day. That's the Lamb. That's the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. That's the non-existent battle. When this judgment comes, it's just like that. Because it's not a matter of God taking on this harlot and struggling to defeat her. It's a matter of God saying, okay, it's time. That's really all it is. When God says it's time, then the judgment will come. And it will come, as it says here, not literally, but God's judgment here is portrayed, the power of God is portrayed as just, it'll come in a day. Verse 8, for this reason, her plague will come in a single day. Death and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire. For mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. And that's the point. Mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. If you are wavering in your faith, if you're unsure of which way this victory is going to go, well, John's hope that's given here in the vision, that's written down for the saints, is don't worry about it. God is mighty, and He will take care of this, and He will do it. He'll just do it in a day. That's how powerful God is. No, I don't think it's a literal reference to, me personally, I don't think it's a literal reference to the destruction of Rome, because even after the writing of Revelation, Rome goes on for hundreds of years.
But, it sounded like you were saying it's going to just take a day for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm thinking is when I read it, like one of the spans, well, famine, that could be just one day. I mean, I'm not giving famine a day. It would take one of the day for it.
Yeah, I don't think that it's. Yeah, that would certainly be true. But I don't really think that the picture is really of the famine or the mourning or the death. I think the picture is, as God's judgment comes, that God's so powerful that this is just all like that. You know, it's all the death, the mourning, the famine, she's burned up with fire, it's just done. And I think the picture there is the mightiness of God is just when God comes and brings judgment, and it's just done. I don't really see it as being linked so much to the pictures he gives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I think. I think it's just a general reference to that kind of activity and how God's going to bring that. Kind of the same as he's not literally going to give her a cup to drink. You know, and mix it double strong. It's just kind of the idea of that's the way you can picture in your mind the strength of this judgment. Yeah. That's right. In verse 10, it says, alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come. Beautiful. That's right.
Time and time again, numbers and so forth are
symbolic. That's right. And that's kind of hard sometimes. That's right. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, Buford's just reminded, I'm sorry. That's right. Buford's just reminding us to keep in mind that it's all figurative as we read through here. And that's kind of like reading Isaiah sometimes. You can get to reading it and it sounds like it's written after the fact. And you have to remind yourself it's not. And Revelation is the same way. But these are just pictures. This is a vision. God's using images and pictures for John to see and for him to relay to us so that we'll understand. I think here what he's wanting us to see is the absolute power of God that when he brings this judgment, judgment's swift. It's not a problem for God. What? That's right. Yeah. When you think about
like that, I think back of how would they have taken it, and they would have certainly understood the vast
amount of power. That's right. Mike's just saying that if you think back to the readers who would have first read this and see it the way they would see it, then it's not really hard to see how that power is emphasized, because it's like Mike said, it doesn't happen in a day, really. But the power of God's portrayal is doing all of this, and the power to do it just like that. That's right.
Even though they may be scattered in all of these nations, the nations are not going to be saved. You're not going to find a nation that's serving God as a whole law. It's going to be on an individual basis.
That's right.
So the warning that we have for us to look at our own self and the wickedness that's in the world and have the confidence God's going to take care of that in His name. What we need to do is take care of our life and our service to God now.
That's right.
It doesn't matter what happens to these nations. We'd like to say that America's going to be, you know, the faithful nation, but we know that's not going to happen. But individuals can't. They can take care of that on their own selves.
That's right. Brother Ogles was just mentioning that if we stop and kind of look at what this holds for us today, then what we need to see, even when we look around and the world is evil and it looks all-powerful at times, that God's going to take care of that, and He'll take care of it in His time, and we need to take care of ourselves in our time, and then all things will work out. Brother Bowen. That's right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Brother Bowen mentions that as we read through Revelation, we not only see God's power in everything, but we see God's perspective. He sees the whole picture. He sees the evil that lies behind what might look one way but be another. And there's comfort in that. There's a lot of comfort in knowing that God sees the truth. God knows what's really going on behind the scenes, and He will take care of it, as Brother Ogle said, in His time. And we can trust that, and we can have faith in Him and walk with Him, because in these portrayals, those who are faithful, that are in the army of the Lamb, then they have the reward that the Lamb brings. Brother Bowen.
Forces were at work, spiritual kind of were in this empire.
much so. Surely are. But what Brother Bowen was saying was that many people, I think accurately so, look back at those two beasts that we looked at earlier. And even in this portrayal, and we see that the anti-Christian government and the anti-Christian, what was the other one? Religion, the false prophet that's there, and how those forces work together against God. And sometimes those forces, as we see them, we think that they're getting the upper hand. But they're not. The Lord will take care of them in their time. Brother Bullard. In chapter 14, verses 12 and 13. Okay, Brother Bullington wants us to look at Revelation chapter 14, verses 12 and 13. It said, here is a call for the endurance of the saints, those who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, write this, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Blessed indeed, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds follow them. That's an excellent time to think of those verses. Kind of tying everything that we're saying together, those who are faithful, those who believe in the Lamb and follow the Lamb, their reward is eternal because the victory goes to the Lamb. And as these verses say, blessed are those who are dead who die in the Lord. From now on, the Spirit says, blessed indeed that they may rest from their deeds, from their labors, for their deeds follow them. That's right.
And they were wondering about their fellow men who were being slaughtered and tired and killed.
That's right.
And how this entire book is a bit of their spirit.
That's right. That's what this book was for, was to encourage the faithful that the victory is God's. And wait on the Lord. He will take care of things in His time. It's really sad that Revelation is distorted so badly in so many different directions, because the message for the faithful is a beautiful message. And as you said, it's a message of hope. It's a message of encouragement to those who lived in the first century, who feared and died at the hands of the pagans. Their rest followed. God took care of them. Charles? That's right. That's right. Brother Ligaber points our minds back to Paul writing to Timothy when he's talking about how God knows who's faithful to him, and how later, as he wrote just a little bit later, how those who are evil just wax worse and worse and worse. And that's the way it was in Paul's day, and that's the way it is today, as Brother Ligaber pointed out. That's the way it was here. So the comfort that's in these passages is eternal for all Christians in every period of time in history, because the same things, it may not happen the same way, it may not happen as severe, but the same things happen. Evil people create havoc in the world, and faithful people suffer for it at different times, and we can take heart. As the Bible tells us at different times and different places, to wait on the Lord. And that patience that we have in the Scriptures is the patience that says, God will take care of this. The victory is His, and I will remain faithful to Him, like Brother Bullington was mentioning in verse 13 of chapter 14. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. From now on, blessed indeed that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds follow them. It's really a wonderful study in Revelation, if we can glean the things that God intended from it And hopefully we are indeed doing that. In chapter 18, well, our class is almost over. In chapter 18, as we look toward the end of that, we'll let Bob finish that Sunday, we see the kings and the merchants and the shipmasters and all of those who had loved the harlot and who had benefited from the harlot. Now, they all stand afar off. They're all fearful. They all mourn and they all weep, but nobody goes to her aid. They all stand back. And that is the way of the world also. Those friends who are close, when you have something to benefit them, that are worldly people, they're far away when the times turn bad. And that's the way they are here. Everyone pictured as weeping and wailing and crying. But everyone, in verse 10, the kings, they will stand far off in fear of her torment. And in verse 15, the merchants of these wares who gained wealth from her will stand far off in fear of her torment. And then again in verse 17, toward the end of that verse, all shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors, and all whose trade is on the sea stood far off and cried as they saw the smoke of her burning. But in verse 20, what is the attitude of the faithful in heaven? Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her. And that goes back to what Freddie said earlier. This judgment that God's bringing seems in large part to be because of the persecutions they have held against those who were faithful to him. That's right. That's right. And that goes back to Brother Bowen's mentioning the divine perspective. It's something we need to do from time to time, often really, is stop and try to see things from God's point of view. He shows it to us fairly often as we look here, this destruction, as God looks down at this judgment that comes against the harlot, the attitude of the faithful is rejoicing because the judgment's been brought. And the warning is don't be in that when the judgment comes. You come out of it. And that's the warning for the faithful. Stay away from that and don't fall victim to those temptations. I really appreciate your comments. And God willing, Bob will take up in these chapters and go from there Sunday.